Let's talk. Let's talk. Giles Brown. Let's talk. We're going over to our friends, a regular guest. Look, I think we can call him friend of the show these days. It's James Wilcox from Untamed Borders. James, good morning to you, sir.
Morning, Giles. That's lovely to be considered a friend of the show. I'll try and be a good guest.
Well, I think you kind of are, because you take us to the most, if you're part of the expression, you take us to sort of places we've never been before, darling. There's no answer to that, isn't it? Just explain a little bit about Untamed Borders and what you actually do before we get stuck into the nuts and bolts of where we're going this time.
Yeah, so I'm James. I run a small travel company called Untamed Borders. We take people to places that they would find difficult to organise themselves. That's usually places in the Middle East, yep. Central Asia, North Africa. And previously, I've spoken to Giles about travel to Iraq, travel to Libya, yep. And travel to Afghanistan. And actually today, Giles has invited me on to talk about a place that isn't on the highest danger list on the Foreign Office website. So yes. it's a slight step down, but I think it's fascinating nonetheless.
Well, I think the thing is, it's not a destination that you think of people would think about going, because people go, I think I'll go to India because it's got that whole background and everybody's seen the exotic Marigold Hotel and all that, Gandhi and all that sort of. But you mentioned Pakistan and people might go, Oh, I'm not sure about going there, because there's a lot of sort of misinformation, or there's a lot of, shall we say, preconceptions, James. So explain to me what exactly we're talking about and what regions we're looking at within the city, within the country itself.
100%. And I think that's a view for a lot of countries, but I feel that's a very specific sort of British view. I first went to Pakistan over 20 years ago. And exactly, I thought it was like a kind of dry version of India. Dry both in a bit boring and dry as in you can't get a drink. So what would be the point? And I think that exists. And also Pakistan has suffered from insurgency and terrorism and these kind of things. And so you combine the two and it doesn't seem like a particularly appealing place to go. But Pakistan is a huge country. It's got 200 million people in it. It's extremely varied, both in the geography, both in the people, and both in the security of the country. And there definitely are parts of the country that you wouldn't want to go to and you can't go to, and there are parts of the country which, as I've said, are not on any sort of warning list by the FCDO and see a lot of visitors every year.
Because it's the thing, I mean, you know, Pakistan, it's partition, isn't it? That's the whole thing. It's this whole thing in off when India is granted independence, 1947, and then there's a horrendous thing where basically Hindus have to move one way, Muslims have to move the rest, and therefore it is a vast country with a vast population, you are going. It's much more than just Islamabad, which we're going to see sort of making the news, isn't it?
Absolutely. And as you said, in Pakistan and India were part of, you know, this vast continent which had different empires and you know, these borders are relatively new when the British had partition. And in fact, an interesting fact was Pakistan thought about calling itself India, because India was going to call itself Bharat. And Bharat is the sort of Hindi name for the subcontinent. And the Indus River, which essentially flows from the north to the south of Pakistan, is the etymology of India. And Pakistan thought about calling itself India. And India were like, well, we're not going to have that. So they call themselves India. And Pakistan is a name that's not anything to do with the country. It's made up of the provinces. So P for Punjab, K for Kashmir, the Istan for Balochistan, and yeah. A is Afghan, which is kind of the Pashtuns are the Afghans. So it's kind of like it's all the different ethnic groups makes up Pakistan. And it means the land of the enlightened. So it's a very clever made up name.
Mind officially blown there, James. You see, I didn't know that at all. Yeah.
There you go.
So what we're talking about is, as always in these areas, you know, ethnic groups. It's not there. It's not one group, because again, these are kind of borders that have been enforced upon them. So Kashmir is part of Pakistan, not India. Is that a sore point, James?
I'll get to that in a sec. But as you said, yes, there are different ethnic groups in Pakistan. Not as many as in India. Yeah. But essentially, Pakistan, as I said, is the length of the Indus River with a few little bits bolted on. And the biggest population in Pakistan are Punjabi, are people from the Punjab, yeah. Which is Lahore and Islamabad and those areas to the north. And there are Pashtuns who are sort of, who also live in Afghanistan, closer to the border. And there are Sindhis who live in the south. There are Baloch who live in the bit nearest to Iran. and then there's a small number of ethnic groups in the north, including Kashmiris. And we could spend a six-parter on the Kashmir incident. But Kashmir essentially is split between India and Pakistan. It's disputed between the two. They both claim each other's bits, but it's been like that for such a long period of time that essentially the Kashmiris that live in Pakistan are Pakistani, and the ones that live in India are India. And it occasionally flares up on the Indian side.
Yeah.
But as far as the Pakistan side is concerned, you don't really see any sort of issues from that particular conflict.
Can we just talk about the really entertaining thing, which is basically, is it the handout or the closing of the borders that everybody queues up for? Well, now, where about, you know, you see the marching, you see the Hindi, the Pakistani troops on one side, the Indians on the other. Is it closing of the gate every evening, or the opening of the gate or something? What is the gate?
So between, it's actually done in a few different locations.
Right.
But the most famous one is a place called Wagga. And so Wagga, the border was split between Amritsar. Amritsar's famous for the Sikh Golden Temple, and that's in India.
Yeah.
And Lahore on the other side, which is this incredible medieval Mughal centre of the town, which includes the Badshahi Mosque, which for 300 years was the largest mosque in the world. It includes all of this incredible old medieval city. And between the two of these great cities to visit in the world, there's the border, and the border is at Wagga. And as you said, every day there's a ceremony in which the flag is taken down, and you have the Indian troops on one side, the Pakistani troops on the other. They basically, if you're a huge guy, if you're 6'6", you get drafted into this thing. Like, they're the biggest Pakistanis and Indians you've ever seen on either side of the border. They sort of goose step, very sort of Fawlty Towers, John Cleese goose stepping up and down, saluting, giving each other dirty looks. It's a big performance. But the most incredible thing is it's pretty much the same every day.
Yeah.
But you have probably 10,000 people on either side watching it and supporting it every day, like a football game, like really cheering every time they salute and the flag comes down and all of this. But they know the result. I mean, it's a wonderful thing to witness. And again, it's one of these, I've seen it on both sides of the border.
Yeah.
And the thing I prefer on the Pakistan side, because there's much less tourists, and they just bring you to the front. You get the best seats in the house because they want to, they want to show off that they have, they kind of want to show off to the Indian side that there are sort of international people visiting Pakistan. And on the Indian side, there's lots of tourists, so you're not so special.
On a smaller scale, James, in the 80s, between Gibraltar and Spain, there used to be a little guard post with some poor 18-year-old conscript in the million Spanish sitting there and standing there in the blazing, and it was literally a pillbox where you could put one man in like that. And on the other side, there'd be basically the British Army, which used to be quite good fun before things got a lot friendlier. But it used to raise a wry smile.
Did you get any crowds watching?
No, it wasn't quite the same. It wasn't quite the same, thank goodness. So I'm glad you mentioned sort of, because, I'm a medievalist historian sort of thing, because we tend to think, nothing kind of tended to exist before partition. But of course, you mentioned Mughals. I mean, this is a rich and a historical culture. We're talking warlords. We're talking fascinating civilizations, aren't we?
Yeah, and so, history is just one bloody thing after another. But yes, there's a lot of history within Pakistan, and it starts with a civilization that's not very well known, called the Indus Valley Civilization. And where we've talked about in the Iraq episode about Mesopotamia being the cradle of civilization, but also the Nile Valley being one of these first places where there was writing and when there was these city-states coming together. The third place was the Indus Valley, and nobody knows much about it. They've discovered the cities. There's one at Mohenjo-daro, which is a UNESCO site, but nobody sort of followed on from them. They just died out, and then other people swept in. The Aryans swept in from the north. And so you have these really, really ancient sites. As far as things to see that are more sort of spectacular, it's really from the Mughal period where you have some incredible things, and that is predominantly Lahore, and probably my favourite in Pakistan, which is Peshawar, which is close to the Afghan border. And both of them have a sort of a complete medieval center. So lots of winding alleyways, traditional people, traditional dentists pulling out teeth. There's a new fashion in Lahore of cutting hair with fire. So they put this flammable liquid on there.
Okay.
Bone setters, traditional bone setters, traditional medicine people, like all of this kind of subcontinental, very traditional methodologies. Snake oil salesman.
Are we talking full on Monty Python here, basically?
Yeah, it's really a bit on that sort of thing. I mean, literally people saying oil from snakes to cure illnesses, like actual snake oil salesman. So you get all of that stuff, plus this incredible architecture. As I said, the Badshahi Mosque, the largest mosque in the world for 300 years, and similar but larger than the Red Mosque in Delhi. And there was, it was also a big Sikh civilization in the 19th century. So there's this huge fort in Lahore for that. So you get to experience a lot of these kind of things.
Now, where are we flying into? Are we flying to Islamabad? I mean, presumably, what's your preferred route to get in there? And I mean, because it's not all medieval cities. I mean, presumably, it is also a modern and functioning country, James.
Well, talking about modern and functioning, Islamabad was built in the 1960s.
Yeah.
So Islamabad is a bit like Canberra or Brasilia or one of the Milton Keynes or one of these like modern purpose-built cities. It feels like, I don't know, like an Australian suburb, most of it, because it's just houses and a shopping centre in the middle. It's got obviously a subcontinental vibe, but it's laid out in that way. So people often fly into Islamabad. People often fly into Lahore. People often can fly into Peshawar or Karachi in the south.
Yeah.
But Islamabad is often useful because it's a bit of a gateway to the far north, which is one of for tourists, probably the most sort of interesting, despite all these incredible Mughal cities in on the plains.
Yeah.
It's the mountains of Pakistan, which are probably its most unique, unique and sort of a place that should get its sort of more world attention, I feel.
So why is that? Because it's untouched and it's absolutely in the foothills of the Himalayas, as Brad Pitt famously used to call it?
Well, I think one thing is that you can relatively easily connect from Islamabad to these incredibly high peaks because in the 1960s they built the Karakoram Highway, which stretches from Islamabad in Pakistan to Kashgar in western China, and it stretches 1,300 kilometres. And it goes over the highest paved international border point in the world, at the Kundra Pass, which is almost as high as Mont Blanc between Pakistan and China.
Yeah.
It goes through the Hunza Valley. So the road in the Hunza Valley is maybe sort of 1,500 metres high, but there's sort of 7,500 metre peaks on either side. So it's these incredible vistas that are hard to comprehend. There's one little restaurant which you can sit at, and you can see up to a mountain called Rakaposhi. And from where you're sitting to the top is 6,000 meters of constant vertical elevation, which nowhere else in the world.
And this is is like on the M25 as you're driving up, is it?
It would be hard to describe the M25 as the M25, but it's a paved road that winds its way through the mountain. But it allows you close access to some of these incredible mountains and incredible peaks.
What are we talking of in terms of what we need, sort of in visas wide? I mean, as a British citizen, what are you going to need to get in there?
So Pakistan since I've been working there, it's had a long history of being a bit of a pain to get a visa, but now it has an e-visa system, which is relatively straightforward. Yeah. It takes a little bit of time, but you apply online. And it's free. But it just takes a little bit of time for you to put in your passport and a bit of documentation. It doesn't come back straight away. It takes maybe a week or so.
Fair enough. Now, you talked about it being a dry country. We're talking on a Friday, which is a big day, obviously, in the calendar. Predominantly Muslim. I mean, here's a stupid question. Big thing in Pakistan, the religion. So, but again, if you're just looking at your social media and getting your news off, whatever, you're going to think this is another thing that feeds into the sort of it's quite dangerous, it's quite wild westy in Pakistan. I mean, as a Westerner, everything relatively fine if you keep your wits about you, James, and don't do anything stupid.
It very much depends on where you go. So in and around Islamabad, primarily fine. In the far north, there's really never been any incidents in the far north. The far north has all these minority ethnic and religious groups that don't really, geopolitically, it's a bit of a backwater, so there really aren't any issues there. I mean, one ethnic group in the north, the Kalasha people, there's 3,000 of them. They're not Muslim. They are pagan people. They build these kind of totems that look of ancestors that look a little bit like things from Native America. Okay. They make their own wine. They make their own wine, and they drink their own wine in the mountains close to the Afghan border near Chitral. And they just have their own ceremonies and their a complete different way of life.
What's the name of the tribe again?
The Kalasha, the K-A-L-A-S-H-A.
So Chateau Kalasha, or 73, is an excellent year.
Well, they have two types. They both call it wine. One is wine as we might understand it, made from grapes, and the other they sort of make moonshine and often flavour it with mulberries, which is actually quite tasty, quite tasty. And as far as Pakistan does have a national beer, Murray beer, because Pakistan is a sort of strange place. You have the military is extremely strong in Pakistan,
yeah.
And a lot of these guys. And the sort of upper classes of Pakistan, you know, some of them are British educated or internationally educated. And the idea of having a beer in the evening and these things is absolutely fine. And if you're maybe 8% of the population of Pakistan is Christian, and Christians are allowed to drink. So people do drink. And this is somewhere like Islamabad. You can find these things. But you go 200 kilometers west to Peshawar, and it's extremely conservative. The Pashtuns are extremely conservative. No one. It's a completely dry state. Nobody's allowed to drink. You don't see as many women on the street. It's a very sort of conservative place. And you go further west from Peshawar to the border areas with Afghanistan, and this is an area that until very recently didn't even function under Pakistani law. They was called the tribal areas, and they stuck to how the British had set it up, which is that they had their own tribal laws in these areas, which worked fine in the sort of 19th century, but when you get to the 20th century and there's a part of the world that doesn't fit with the international laws, you end up with people making guns, people making fake money, smuggling, terrorism, all of this sort of stuff. So the different parts of Pakistan have completely different aspects.
You mentioned it's conservative in some states. Female travellers, presumably they're coming in, they're going with you, James. You wouldn't want to do this independently. So, again, is it sort of kind of like when we're doing Libya and that sort of thing? As long as you don't walk around with a MAGA T-shirt and a crop top, you're going to be relatively okay?
Yeah, and I think if you enter the far north, if you enter the Hunza Valley, which I was talking about with this sort of 6,000-metre thing, female travellers go there. I mean, it's the people in that valley are Ismaili Muslims. And Ismaili Muslims have I think most people in the West would consider it a less conservative form of Islam. You know, women in that form of Islam don't have to cover their hair. They don't. You know, it's done is very different. A lot of women work. A lot of women play sports. So if you went into certain parts of Afghanistan, it'd be absolutely fine for a female traveller to travel alone, especially if they've travelled to parts of the developing world in the past.
So what are we looking at then? So what are we doing? Sort of 10 days, 2 weeks? I mean, if we're going to go, because it's a bit vast country, but what are we picking out as some cultural highlights, James? I mean, we're landing at Islamabad because it's easy to get there, and then like Milton Keynes, but with a certain flavour, we're getting quite easily out of there because it's got a good road system, etc. Where are we, in your experience, where are we heading to first if we've got a sort of a 10-day trip?
I'm going to give you three very quick options. I'm going to give you a week, a 2 week, and a 3 week.
I will shut up and let you talk. Off you go, my friend.
And it depends on the time of the year, because in our summer, it's going to be roasting hot on the plains until the monsoon hits. So if you're going in the winter, but in the mountains, it's going to be freezing cold. You don't want to go to the mountains.
Right.
So if you want a winter trip for a week, Lahore and Peshawar. I just talked about Lahore and Peshawar with their old historical centres. But between the two, you can stop at, the famous salt mines. It's the second largest salt mine in the world, and you can go on a train through it, which is interesting enough. But it's between Islamabad and Lahore, but it's pink salt. You know, you buy that Himalayan pink salt, it's extremely expensive.
Yeah.
But it comes out the second largest mine in the world in Pakistan, and they use it to grit the road. It's extremely cheap. So we would go there because that sort of blows people's minds.
Yeah.
That the Himalayan pink salt.
That's like driving over lemons over here, that whole thing, isn't it?
Exactly. And that's why they call it Himalayan pink salt, because if you called it Pakistani pink salt, it wouldn't sell because of people's idea. And we would also stop at Taxila. And Taxila was the capital of the Gandharan Empire. And the Gandharan Empire was about 2,000 years ago, and it was... It was an empire that was built between the Greeks when they encountered Buddhism. And so there's all of these different sort of Greco-Buddhist stupas and stuff in the museum.
Doesn't Alexander the Great come down the Indus Valley, isn't he, when he's having a crack?
Yeah, he crossed the Indus River at a place called Ind. There's a little monument for him there. And you still have people in that part of the world called Sikander, yes, which means Alexander. You still get the name is quite common. So people definitely have, they do relate to that. If we had 2 weeks, we would go up the Karakoram Highway to, as we go to a place where these three great mountain ranges meet, the Hindu Kush,
yep,
the Himalaya, and the Karakoram Mountains. And the Karakoram Mountains, when the Asian plate and the Indian plate came together millions of years ago to create this one continent,
yep,
the Karakoram were an archipelago of islands in the middle of the sea. And so they are steeper than all of the Himalaya. They're the steepest mountains. That's where you have K2 and you have all these other mountains, a part of the Karakoram range. So they are the steepest parts of the Himalaya. That's why you get these incredible valleys.
Right.
So we'd go up to Hunza, we'd cross over the Shandal Pass, which hopefully the Shandal Polo Festival would be going on, which is the world's highest polo festival held at a Bannan Pass that's 3,700 metres high. Then we would go down to Chitral, see the Kalasha people, drink the wine, take part in the dancing and all of that stuff, and then squeeze down back to Peshawar.
When you say the Polo Festival, because I've got Sula Grande 20 minutes down the road from me, is it polo as we know it, or is it, are they running around with some poor goat's head somewhere, or is it proper polo, James?
I would argue that it is proper polo because it's rough. I don't know how much you're allowed to block each other's sticks and how much you're allowed to. It's a very physical form of polo.
Right.
I'm not a polo expert. I've seen it at the Shandal Polo Festival, and from what I'm told, they are allowed to do a lot more physical. It's polo, yeah, as in it's the ball. It's the same rules. You change, yeah, ends after you score. You do all that kind of stuff. But there is a lot more. It's sort of like polo with football from the 1970s,
right,
rules rather, okay, than from 2020.
We're talking at least 1970s Leeds United polo, basically, are we?
Yes, exactly. Leeds, Chelsea, this kind, yeah, of thing. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And then if you had 3 weeks, you'd go in the summer and you would do a huge hike to a place called Concordia, where you're probably hiking for, you're hiking to sort of 14 out of these 21 days. And the point is a place called Concordia. And at Concordia, you are surrounded by four of the 14 8,000 meter peaks. So there's, wow, 14 mountains over 8,000 meters in the world, and four of them surround this place called Concordia, including K2, the world's second highest mountain. So we would hike there up this huge glacier. There's a huge road of ice to this place, which has the biggest concentration of high mountains in the world.
And when you say hike, are we talking sort of you can do it with sensible, walking boots? You don't need any particular sort of crampons, ice picks, that sort of thing.
It would be good to have some sort of proper boots, but it, yeah, is a, there's no major passes to get there.
Right.
You from the trailhead, you essentially hike up a valley, yep, and then you get onto the glacier and you hike up the glacier, and that's where you get to Concordia. You could do it it's a serious expedition.
Yep.
You have to do it as a supported expedition because K2 is right on the border with China and Pakistan. But as far as it being, it's tough because it's a multi-day trek. But there aren't any huge high passes to go over.
I mean, is how good is the wow factor if you've got four of the world's sort of peaks? And they're sheer, aren't they? So they look like mountains that you draw when you were a kid because, up one side, down the other side. I mean, is it quite an experience sort of looking around and seeing and realising where you are, James?
Yeah, and it's quite, it's hard to, when you get into that sort of, that sort of scale, it's hard to understand the scale,
yeah,
of what you're seeing. But there's all different types of mountains. There is, on the way up, you go past these things called the Trango Towers, and they just look like sort of Jenga blocks stuck on their end. They're really, yeah, square. And K2 is this big sort of pyramid, essentially. Yeah. They all have a different vibe. But, yeah, to be so sort of small in that huge environment is quite humbling.
And if you really want to be small in a huge environment, Pakistan versus India cricket is presumably, you feel very small.
Cricket, yeah. I mean, cricket's obviously huge in Pakistan. I mean, it's just a, yeah, in all of the subcontinent.
So,
absolutely.
So,
No, go on.
No, sorry. After just quickly, medical wise, what are we needing to get? What are we needing to get sort of sorted? I mean, probably sort of jabs against this, that, and the other.
We always have to check. I think if you're traveling to anywhere that's in the subcontinent or Southeast Asia, I mean, there's the usual kind of shots that you should get for cholera and for the normal things. But you'd have to check with your doctor on that. I can't remember it to hand.
And finally, generally, people, friendly, great food. I mean, it's a place that we kind of go, oh, no, Pakistan. But it's somewhere that's definitely worth investigating with a proper guide, James.
Yeah, I think it is worth investigating with a proper guide. Pakistanis, by and large, are extremely friendly. And people from the Pakistan, you know, the level of education, especially in the cities, is pretty high. And people know that they have a poor reputation, like they have a bad reputation internationally. So people are almost over the top in being hospitable because they want to say, this is really not what it's like. And it isn't what it's like. It's not what it's like on the ground. Like the general impression people have is so different. Out of everywhere I go, I think it is one of the ones that's like, you know, it just isn't the way that people think it is.
If people want to find information, find out where you're going on your next trip, find out about what you're up to. James, where should they go and check out and see, you know, what trip's coming up next and where they can get involved?
They can find us out on the website, www.untamedborders.com. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook at Untamed Borders. Email the guys, info@untamedborders.com. You've got a question for me, just put my name at the top and it'll end up getting to me. And yeah, any questions at all, we'd love to hear from you.
James, always great to speak to you. Let's have a think about where we're going next. Have you got a thought?
I was thinking Yemen or Syria, but ooh, you know.
Yemen or Syria? Now, medievalist, we can go completely the Crusader Straits on us with that. Don't get me started, but James Wilcox at Untamed Borders, thank you so much for your time today. Have a great rest of your weekend, a great weekend, mate.
Thanks, Charles. Have a great weekend.